Welcome among
the Rollist.
I am today at the UK Games Expo for the second time, and to start things in the best fashion possible, I'm here at the booth of...
We're Paizo Incorporated.
Paizo? Oh, that's a little company. I've heard of you.
You may have heard of a little game called Pathfinder or another little game called Starfinder.
Starfinder, interesting. And I got two lovely people with me.
Yes, so I'm Amanda Hammond-Kuntz, and I am the managing developer for Starfinder.
And I'm Jason Bowman. I'm the director of game design at Paizo.
What's happening with Pathfinder?
So for us here at this show, we are demoing the newest version of Pathfinder, Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
So that you here today, what I see I played at the table is the brand new version.
Is the new version of Pathfinder. Yeah, we're giving people a taste of the game here today, but the actual playtest version of Pathfinder doesn't release until August 2nd.
I'm not following things closely online, but I was a bit puzzled by Pathfinder too, because the big fan of Pathfinder I know were people who were really keen on a former version of Dungeons & Dragons 3.5. So
sure.
I always saw Pathfinder as a legacy kind of game, keeping things in place. So, are things new while keeping that legacy?
So that's kind of the trick, right? Is to find a way to keep the spirit of the game the same while still modernizing some of the rules and making it a little easier for people to play, right? I think one of the things that's great about Pathfinder is that you get to decide what kind of character you want to play, and the rules let you make that character. You decide what kind of story you want to tell, and the rules enable you to tell that story. We wanted to keep that, but we wanted new players to be able to come to the game and learn how to play without having to read every page of a 500-page rule book. It's too much. But the new version kind of starts you off with a straightforward chassis, a straightforward system, and then lets you build the complexity into your character through your character choices. So we still keep that feel, that taste of Pathfinder that you've come to know from us. But now it's easy to teach a new person how to play, and once they learn how to make one character, they can make their second character and third character and get pulled right in, just like the rest of us have.
Is that something which is compatible, or where does that Starfinder sit with that?
So Starfinder is an entirely separate game from Pathfinder. It is still built on the first edition Pathfinder rules chassis, but there are several subsystems and elements mechanically that are tailored specifically for a science fantasy experience in a role-playing game. They are conceptually compatible, Pathfinder and Starfinder, and that will not change with the second edition of Pathfinder, but they really are separate games, and so they are informed by each other, but do not directly interact.
What motivated you to do something like Starfinder rather than, quotation mark, just a setting for Pathfinder, which would be set in space and it would be exactly the same rules, etc.? What made you want to make Starfinder itself?
So really the idea, it really started with a very broad idea that we were interested in doing a science fantasy game, a far future game, something different than anything that we had ever published before. And the idea iterated upon itself with all of us involved in the game, everybody on the team, Jason, the director of game design, Eric Mona, our publisher. We started with an idea of perhaps we could make Pathfinder in space. And, you know, we had an existing campaign setting called Distant Worlds, in which we had explained, you know, the solar system sort of around Galarian. But the more that we talked about it, and the more that we got excited about this idea, the more we realized that we really needed specific mechanics to make this game an experience that would give a fresh perspective on role-playing and really bring in an audience that might not have been interested in traditional fantasy, but is very interested in sci-fi and far future and Star Wars and Star Trek and space opera, which is what Starfinder really is. So the more that we got specific about what we wanted the game to be able to do and the experience we wanted to provide, the more we realized that we really needed it to be a standalone system and experience from a rules perspective.
Yeah, I think mechanically it needed to be its own game to tell science fantasy stories. Right? Science fantasy stories have laser guns. They're a lot more about shooting at people. Pathfinder's about running up and stabbing people with sharp pieces of metal. So the game itself needed to change. It needed to have that level of breathing room. And some of it was for purely narrative purposes. people don't break into enemy starships, get halfway through, and then take a nap. That, like, adventurers were used to them napping in the dungeon and then waking up the next day to continue their adventure.
That's an interesting point. I did not realize that.
But you don't do that in the middle of your battle cruiser fight. Oh, hold on, alien scum. I need to go take a nap. So the game had to be different to allow there to be the different kinds of stories, because otherwise, narratively, you end up in a spot where it doesn't make any sense. And the Starfinder team has done a great job of taking advantage of those rules and really creating a unique setting and world that plays with those mechanics.
For science fiction and fantasy both, there's a lot of competition now. There's a lot of good stuff going on. What would you say is the unique selling point of Starfinder and Pathfinder?
Well, so I'll start with Pathfinder and say that for us, the new version of Pathfinder is trying to find its own home, right? You are right. There's a lot of fantasy games out there. Some of them are very friendly to new players, but their depth only goes so far. They can only do so much, but they're really easy to pick up. We kind of want to be that next step. We want to be the game that you've played some other games. They've taught you the basics of the world, but you have bigger ideas. You have bigger stories to tell, and you need a system with a bit more meat to kind of let you tell those stories, and that's what Pathfinder is there to do.
Great.
So for Starfinder, I think that the appeal is really that it's very much a niche game, in that we are really merging technology and magic and traditional role-playing aspects of combat and tactical circumstances in a specific tabletop game. So there are a lot of games out there that are sort of, I don't want to say generic, but are not that specific. And we have this very rich world that we've already built through, this very rich campaign setting. And so we're allowing you to explore that solar system, that universe in Starfinder, using things that you'll still recognize from traditional Pathfinder, traditional tabletop role-playing games. So we still have spells like Magic Missile in the game. It works a little bit differently in Starfinder, but it's still the same basic concept. And we still have a lot of other basic concepts in the game and monsters as well. And so it's recognizable, but it really opens the door to some of those science fantasy stories that you're able to tell with using computers and hacking and piloting starships and having starship combat in the stars. So there's a lot added onto it that is appealing to people from traditional role-playing games, but also people interested in science fantasy.
I don't actually know much about the setting of Starfinder. What can you tell me about it?
So Starfinder takes place in the sort of nebulous, very far future of the Pathfinder campaign setting.
Oh, so it's the same universe.
It is the same universe, but it's very far in the future. The core planet where Pathfinder takes place, Galarian, has disappeared. And in its place is Absalom Station, which is named after Absalom, the city at the center of the world in the Pathfinder campaign setting. And that's one of the core mysteries of the setting, is what exactly happened to Galarian and where is it. But there's also this thing called the Gap. So the Gap is sort of narratively the split between what happened in the past, which is Pathfinder, and what has happened in the future. And it's this period of time in which memory is hazy and record-keeping became difficult, and so nobody really knows exactly how long it was or what happened or what caused it. But at the end of the Gap, an ascended divinity called Triune gave basically faster-than-light travel, which is a blend of magic and technology in Starfinder, to civilizations. And so that's when sort of space flight started happening, and when all of the baseline basically of Starfinder happened is at that point. So all of those things still exist in Starfinder, but it's the very far future, and these important things have happened to sort of set us going forward.
So Jason, whatever you do, Amanda is in charge of the destiny of all your characters, all your adventures. It doesn't matter. The answer is in Starfinder.
Yeah, I only get to decide the beginning. They get to decide the end. That's and what happens in the middle is up to you.
That must be interesting. Do you leave I would assume there's a lot for fans of Easter eggs in Starfinder about Pathfinder.
Well, that's one of the best parts about it, right? Is that when you go to Starfinder, you will immediately see things that are like, I know what that is. You will see a goblin, and you're like, oh, I know what a goblin is. Goblins are very familiar to me in Pathfinder. But it's wearing this weird bubble helmet, and it's floating outside your ship trying to take your engine apart. And all of a sudden, you're like, I know what that is. We need to kill that immediately. And, you know, the game has a lot of callbacks like that. Like, all of the pieces are there, and that's really great. I think the thing I'm looking forward to most is finding a way to introduce Skittermanders back into Pathfinder. So I want to steal those things. I want it to go the other way as well.
What are these things?
They are adorable little fuzzy monsters. They are on the cover of Alien Archive, right? They're all over the place, and they become very popular. I think this year's Free RPG Day event allows you to play Skittermanders the entire time, and they are fuzzy little monsters. They're adorable.
Skittershot.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, if you want to talk about that.
So Skittermanders are, just like Jason said, they are little furry, adorable creatures who are very convinced that they are helping. And they are so zealous about the fact that they are a race of helpful creatures, a species of helpful creatures, that when they were in the solar system that is with Vesk, which are big lizard people, right? And so they're very warlike. They're very much about like taking over the different planets that were in their system. And one of those planets, Skittermanders lived on. And so the joke around the office is that when the Vesk came to the planet and said, "We are Vesk, we are conquering you," Skittermanders said, "Great! We'd like to help with that," and helped the Vesk take over their world. And so Skittermanders like to stow away on ships. They like to hire on for ridiculous deals to become mercenaries or mechanics or other things. And they're not pests per se, but the Vesk might have something to say about that.
Okay, sounds cool. I've got a traditional question in the show. How would you explain to someone who never seen any kind of it, even stream or audio or whatever, what actually is a tabletop role-playing game?
Oh, interesting. So we have an entire section in the, in many books.
It's almost a personality test, I found out by asking this question to several people.
Yeah, so I say that a tabletop game is a cooperative storytelling experience. And so you have a group of people who sit down at a table together to tell a story, and those stories have protagonists, and those protagonists are called player characters. And so everybody has come up with the story of their protagonist, and it is the game master's duty and responsibility and privilege to set the world in front of these protagonists and decide what challenges are going to be in the protagonist's way, what challenges and fights and just stories are going to unfold for these protagonists. And so it's a group effort to have a good time and for everybody to have fun at the table. And maybe Jason would like to add on to this.
Yeah, you beat me to half my answer. I think, you know, it's a shared dream. It's a bunch of people sitting down and creating a story, a tale. And when it works, when you've got a table of people who are committed, who don't do the best thing, they do the right thing for their character, even if that isn't the best thing. That's when you know you've got magic. When you've got a group who's committed to the narrative, committed to the story. And there's few experiences like it. There really isn't. That, you know, when you've got the right group of people with the right story, with the right characters, it can take you to places you never dreamed of. And for me, that makes it all worth it.
That's very interesting. It's oddly close to the definition of the last person I questioned about that. Final question. I'm going to have a little experiment this year at the UK Games Expo. So my question would be, I don't know if you know all the exhibitors here, but is there any other role-playing game publisher which you find especially interesting and maybe that you enjoy yourself besides Paizo?
Here at the show, I'm really looking forward to making my way over to the Modiphius booth. I like a lot of what they're doing. They carry some of the newer games in the industry that I find really fascinating. Tales from the Loop is distributed by them. Their Star Trek role-playing game is a lot of fun. I've played that, and I just finished writing an adventure for them. So I definitely want to swing by their booth and see.
Oh, you wrote for them.
Yeah, we at Paizo are free to kind of freelance wherever we want. So I've written an adventure for the Star Trek role-playing game that I'm really excited to see come out. And I want to go talk to them and make sure it was good. So, yeah, that's what I want to do.
I'm going to go ask them.
Yeah. Oh, great. Let me get over there first.
What about you?
So recently I've been playing a lot of storytelling-based RPGs. And so I've become a big fan of a lot of indie role-playing games, a lot of very small companies that often have Kickstarter campaigns to raise money for their projects and are maybe one designer or two designers and not large companies. And So I very recently was involved in a Kickstarter that was a Jane Austen-based role-playing game called Good Society that was written by a very small group of Australian role-playing game designers. And it was very fun. It really allowed us to sort of make these kind of goofy period characters, and we ran through a scenario in which my character was in a artisanal apiarist and ended up selling a bunch of her artisanal honey at this social event, and there was just all kinds of shenanigans. So I'm a big fan of those kind of games. I'm also a big fan of horror games, and one of those small indie storytelling role-playing games is a game called Dread that a lot of us in the office are fans of. And it's very simple in that its entire resolution mechanic involves a Jenga tower, and every time you would make an attack roll or a skill check or roll a d20 in a d20-based system, you instead take a pull from the Jenga tower, and when the Jenga tower falls over, that means a character has died and the game master gets to decide exactly how that happens.
Have you heard of StarCrossed?
I have heard of StarCrossed. In fact, that campaign I think is still going. I'm very interested in StarCrossed. It sounds
like
it'll
I'd
be
like
fun.
To treat it. I got Dread at home. I haven't played it yet, but I'm very interested by StarCrossed.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you two have a quick closing word if you want, because duty calls. My son is crying in his cradle. But thank you very much for your time, and have a lovely UK Games Expo.
And thank you very much for having us. I hope you have a great show.
Sounds great. Thank you. Untouched spaceman, coming from the future to save the generals. I'm good at fixing scenes with my beautiful kitty. I'm coming from cells and years into the future. It's my phone. I'm not frost, I'm human. But I can feel emotions. I'm Dr. Spaceman, here to save the internet. I'm good, really good at it. I'm a frog sister.
So now I am at the booth of
Mythic Games at UK Games Expo, of course.
So you are not a role-playing game company, but a board game company, but you've got a few licenses. I don't know if it's licensed because it's in public domain, I guess.
No, that's a great point, actually. So we've got Joan of Arc, which has just finished on Kickstarter a couple of months ago, and the pledge manager finishes on Monday the 4th, so that might be a little bit after this, which is fine. And it was our own game design, start to end, and it raised $4 million across Kickstarter and Pledge Manager. Wow. We're really happy with that. It did very, very, very well. And we're here demoing it, showing off the dragon and everything from that for people who backed it to come and get a chance to validate their pledge, hopefully, and be happy with what they got. And generally, people seem to be. The other main thing we have then is Solomon Kane. So this is Robert E. Howard's character, the guy that wrote about Conan the Barbarian.
Yes.
So he did 15 short stories, a number of different fragments and poems as well about Solomon Kane, and it is a licensed product. It is. It's from Cabinet Entertainment. We've licensed this. And essentially what we're doing is bringing a narrative adventure board game to Solomon Kane.
So that's going to be interesting for my audience.
Anyone who's done role-playing, you'll have a chance in this to talk, to engage, to push the story forward, not just through what you do in the board. You even play elements of this game with none of the minis, none of the board elements at all. You do it purely narratively between the players as you talk and discuss what you're going to do. Because the idea is that Solomon Kane is kind of a 16th century witch hunter Puritan. He's kind of a simple character, if I'm honest with you. He just hunts evil, hunts darkness. Like, he's not really deep. He's just a fanatical, kind of driven zealot almost at
times. Not a philosophical, deep character like Conan the Barbarian, for instance.
Yes, Conan's much, much more thoughtful than Solomon.
I guess the author Howard made Solomon Kane so he could relax and chill out with something lighter.
Well, Solomon Kane is full of demons, ghosts, all sorts of darkness and evil, and Solomon's main drive is wiping that stuff off the planet. He will travel around the world to get rid of evil and darkness in men or in demons or in beasts, whatever form it may take. So whenever you come to this game, this is a fully cooperative game, and rather than everybody just kind of sharing Solomon, I'll move him, you move him, I'll move him, that, what we've done instead is embodied each player as one of four cardinal virtues. So these are part of the belief structure of Solomon.
Okay.
So you've got courage, you've got prudence, temperance, and justice, and each one kind of drives a different part of what Solomon does in his life. So justice likes to talk and engage with people and be fair. Courage loves to fight and move and be aggressive. Prudence loves to keep Solomon out of danger and make wise decisions. So each one kind of fulfills a different part of what Solomon's journey and the kind of person he is when he goes into the world.
So you interpret a side of a conflicted character.
Exactly.
Very interesting.
And in the short stories, obviously, you just have one path. You follow the story through and it ends the way it ends. But in this game, what we're doing is expanding on each story. So yes, you may potentially follow the same path, but you may come to a point. I'll give you a very simple analogy. You have a pirate who takes a girl captive. In the book, maybe Solomon just shoots the pirate. However, what you as a group cooperatively may decide to do is talk to the pirate, negotiate with him, get him to release the girl. Maybe you have a completely different outcome depending on what way you want to approach it. And then maybe you kill the pirate. It doesn't matter because it's up to you. It's in your hands. And that'll change. Every time you play the game, you'll get a slightly different narrative path. You may get the same ending as the book. You may get a better ending. You may get a worse ending. Or you may just get a different ending that is maybe a bit more dark or a bit more holy. It purely depends on how you guys approach it as a team.
So what is there some kind of definition of success within the game, or does that work?
So every time you sit down and play, you choose an adventure, and adventures are broken up into chapter cards, and you work your way through chapter to chapter. Now, success may not always be the same thing, but each chapter will have an objective of sorts. So find the lost villager, slay the ghost, save the girl, find the tribe, these kind of different things. So you'll always, each from chapter to chapter, know what your current objective is. But what you don't always know is the full ramifications of what that will lead to. Because you're not able to see the path ahead until you're on to the next chapter. So that's where you'll start to diverge and have things surprise you and come out of nowhere.
Exciting. You are a Luxembourg-based
business? That's where our head office is, although primarily we have a lot of guys in France, a lot of guys in the UK. We have some sculptors and artists in Poland as well. We're a really diverse team. We're quite small. There's only 11 of us at the moment, although we've just hired a few new people, so we're increasing a little bit. And we're hoping to get around, like, for example, this is Solomon Kane. It's coming to Kickstarter on the 12th of June. We've already done 50 demos of this at stores in the UK and France and Belgium. We're very, very, at Mythic Games, very much into trying to kind of show the proof in the pudding, show the game to people early, let them play it before they even back it if we can. And we have another 60 events planned throughout June.
So I cannot leave with that box right now.
I'm afraid not. It is worth saying, this is just our ambassador kit. We have guys here who are basically our ambassadors, who we get join the team, they come with us, they volunteer for events, they come and they take part in sharing it with people. And these are fans of ours who we just give something back to. So they get these kits for themselves to then take to their game stores and clubs and such. We are primarily at the moment a Kickstarter company, but we're still very focused on community and sharing games with people where we can.
My question would be, since you are based in different countries like that, the show itself, the Rollist, is kind of trying to bridge the channel, the pond, yeah, etc. Have you seen different reception of your game in different countries?
That's an incredible question, actually. It's funny what different countries prioritize. For example, in America, we find miniatures is a huge driver. In England and UK, narrative actually is a little bit more important at times. In Spain and Italy, it's all about the native versions. They want the native text. They want it in their languages. And they're very keen on lots of different scenarios. So the feedback from prototypes have been very similar. But what the countries tend to lean towards in terms of why they would back something tends to be a little different. But overall, from Solomon Cain, we've had pretty good responses across the board. And thankfully, what we're really thankful for is by prototyping it early out in stores, we've had a lot of feedback. So what you see here is not going to be the final thing. To give you a quick example, I've got in front of us now, we have a board, but we're going to be changing it to double-sided tiles. And the reason is, if you're in a house, you might just have one tile. If you're chasing someone through an African jungle, you might have four tiles in a line. If you're having a massive fight with 20 pirates on the beach of England, you might have a six board, something like that. So through that testing, we've had a chance to get some feedback that's going to change. And I'll show you this. Again, sorry for everyone at home who can't see us, but we have these wooden dice. And these wooden dice were used just to prototype the game. But people have loved these wooden dice. I don't know. It's not something I've ever seen, but people are like, these are so tactile. They feel so good. They have a thing I love to call fondle factor. Like, they feel good to touch. So we're actually seeing if we can cost up wooden dice instead of plastic dice. And these are the benefits of getting out early and sharing it with people.
So when you say tiles, does that mean the game even could have add-ons in the future?
Well, the game is driven by both dice and cards and decisions. Although there's a narrative adventure to the whole thing, underneath that in the rules, there's like a resource management thing. Because what you'll do a lot of the time is you'll be sharing and collaborating together to make things happen. For example, Courage loves to fight, but there may not always be something for you to fight. So what Courage may do is donate dice and donate actions, essentially, to other players, because you're always choosing the player order each round. You can change who goes when, who's got their big moment to shine. And through every adventure, the different virtues will have times when they'll come into their element. So I've been calling it a little bit of a collaborative game, even more than a cooperative game, because you have the storytelling element. If you're not into the roleplay stuff, the cards do come with just little stories on the back, just enough to get into it. If you like the stories and you like the art, there will be a full, we're hoping if the stretch goals go well, a full hardback, like A4 tome almost, wow, of all the stories, all the art, all the panoramas of all the countries, because he goes to France, Germany, Africa, England, like he did travel a lot in the stories, and then we're also taking him to some places he never went. Robert E. Howard never wrote about America, for example, and the licensors were very happy with the first draft of the game. They actually said, just, if you want to expand on it, take him somewhere he's not been before, go ahead. And we were like, oh my word, this is amazing. So we're going to see what it would have been like if Solomon met Native Americans, what would have been like if he had to deal with Wendigos instead of werewolves and like all these kind of things. So I don't want to spoil too much. You'll have to follow the Kickstarter on the 12th of June if you want to see
but
that
what
stuff.
I meant is, in addition to the core game, do you think you're going to have sequels to the game with more content?
To be honest, it's a little too early to tell. It depends how the Kickstarter does. Never say never. The core game will be about $110 on Kickstarter, and then there'll be add-ons to that. So you can choose and pick different kind of almost expansions, if you wish, at the time of the Kickstarter. So Africa will be one of them, for example. But whether we follow this up with a second game, I'm not sure. Because at the moment, not only are we writing our own stuff, we're using everything Robert E. Howard done. So everything in this book is being covered in our game.
Everything.
Everything. Every single... I say everything, it sounds like a lot, but he only did 15 short stories.
Yeah.
And about half a dozen fragments and poems. He didn't do that much in Solomon Cain, which is why we're so happy that we're able to write our own stuff as well. So would a sequel happen? It's hard to say. It depends on the reception from the community. But we are a company that listens to the community, and if we thought there was appetite for it, we'd absolutely explore it.
Amazing. anything to add to the listeners of the Rollist podcast and people attending the UK Games Expo?
Basically, come and try it out. If you are, go to our Facebook page, go to the Solomon Kane Facebook page. We have a huge events calendar. Try and find an event with you. Come and try the game. If you can't find one, put a message on there. We'll see if we can get an event near you if we can.
So you've got events in the US as well?
At the moment, we will be at Origins. We will be at Gen Con as well.
Oh, great.
So we'll be at both of those. We are only sort of growing our ambassador program in the US. It's very early days. Because we're still a small company, our ambassadors currently outnumber us 4-1. So we have to be a little bit careful about how quickly we expand to the likes of, at the minute, it's France, Germany, Netherlands, and the UK, and also one in Sweden. America, Spain, Germany, Italy, all to follow in the not-too-distant future. But we just have to kind of slowly grow it.
Great, great. Well, thank you very much.
And thank you so much for your time, sir.
You for what you put me through, sadness and sorrow. You came and took from me my youth and honesty. In my heart, you are a. I can't fight the demon inside your head. I tried all I could, I even lost myself. You just can't be the man you want to be. Any woman in a skirt, you go weak at the knees. So many bad memories. I've had to play the game and put away the pain in a silent mode. But all my body aches, life has a bitter taste of cheap alcohol. Demon inside your head. I tried all I could, I even lost myself. You just can't be the man you want to be. Any woman in a skirt, you go weak at the knees. So many bad thank you.
Soren.
Soren
Miles.
Oh yeah, and the role is
brilliant.
Actually, his middle name is inspired by a sci-fi character from, you know, the Volker Sigan saga by Lois McMaster Bujold.
No,
I recommend it. It's very good. I recommend to start with young Miles, and it's a character who tries to join the military academy and fails.
That's
the starting point.
There you go.
I'm now here with
John Lunn, the producer
Pleased
of Spider-Man Games.
You.
Very nice to be here. Thank you for having me on.
And you are publishing a role-playing game, among other things.
Yes, it was 2016 that we first launched a Kickstarter campaign to raise enough funds for the role-playing game. And then a year later, we'd fully funded that. It was into production. We were just about to print the RPG when we came up with the idea for the battle cards system, which is what we're here at the UK Games Expo today to sort of promote as a prototype. We've got a couple of prototypes that we're running through. And the idea behind that was we have a number of Elite Dangerous players who are fans of role-playing games. We also have a number of role-playing game fans who've come to the Elite Dangerous world through our RPG. But we realized that the RPG was limited to people who had, you know, who either loved RPGing, who loved GMing, or who had a group that would love to play it. And we did have a lot of people say to us that whilst they liked the RPG, loved the artwork, loved the design, they would really like to have a game that was a bit more accessible. And so, of course, we started thinking, well, what else is there that we could build? We came up with the idea for the Battle Cards game, pitched the idea to Frontier. They loved it. And so, yeah, we've launched it recently to the community, to the Elite Dangerous community, and we're now here launching it to a wider audience. And within the next few weeks, we're hoping to launch an Indiegogo campaign to raise the funds to be able to put this into full production.
The first thing which came out was the role-playing game then.
Yes, it was. Yeah, the role-playing game came out. We've actually produced 5 books in the series. There's the core book that you can see here that's printed. And we are in the process of printing the 4 supplements. There are 4 extra add-on, smaller supplement-style 50-page, 60-page booklets which come. And they specialize on certain aspects of the game. So there's one for military missions, there's one for espionage, there's one for super traders, and there's one for exploration. They're being printed at the moment, so they will be available in physical form by, we hope, the end of this month. That'll also be the time when we are going to be fulfilling those items to our backers who backed us last year on the Kickstarter campaign.
Cool. What was the inspiration for Elite Dangerous?
Well, both Oliver, the lead writer for the RPG, and myself had played the original Elite back in the early 80s. Lost weeks of our youth to the game, loved it.
Sorry, I'm not familiar with the original.
Yeah, it was 1983 when David Braben and a fellow university student friend of his, whilst they were at Cambridge, built the original Elite computer game. Back then it was on, I mean, I played it on the Acorn Electron, people played it on the ZX Spectrum, but at the time it was a seminal break from the normal games, which, as I'm sure everyone remembers, was the sort of tennis or the Pac-Man style two-dimensional bird's eye view. What Ian Bell and David Braben were able to do was they were able to procedurally generate an entire galaxy, 8 galaxies in total. You were flying first person from the cockpit of a Cobra Mark III, and it just was, in its day, stunning. Just absolutely stunning. And it was all, I believe, I'm sure I'll be corrected, it was on a 32K or a 64K program. That's how they managed to fit everything into that. So it became one of the best-selling computer games of its time. And since then, because of the number of fans that grew up with that, for the last 30 years, up until 2012, when they announced that they were releasing Elite Dangerous, there has been a huge community of people waiting for the next iteration of Elite Dangerous. And when it came out and they decided to kickstart it in 2012, we were right on there. And from very early on, Oliver, who lives, eats and breathes RPGs, kept saying to me, wouldn't it be great if there was an RPG for it? And we started talking about it, and I think, if we're being honest, we kind of thought, well, it'll be a fan-made project. We'll shove it up on the forums as a PDF. And as we approached Frontier for a license, we started to realize that actually there's a possibility that we could make this professionally.
And here you are today.
And here we are. And it deserves that extra shine. So we're very grateful for all our backers on the Kickstarter project who led us to do it. So
is there the video game itself was... Now that you mentioned it, actually, I realized, yeah, I had heard about this game. I didn't play it myself, but I remember a friend mentioning it and telling me how much he played to it and how fascinated
hours and hours
by the procedural aspect of it. So is there a procedural aspect in the role-playing game itself?
Yeah, there is. I mean, obviously, with computers, you can do a lot more of it. But there's we've had to take... I think one of the hardest things was we had to take some of the aspects of procedural generation and make it easy for people to be able to create, for example, adventures. So in the core book, at the back of the core book, there is a section where with a dice roll, you can procedurally generate an adventure by rolling hooks. So you initially roll for what genre it is, military, exploration, super traders, or espionage. You then roll for a situation. So is it on a surface base? Is it on a space station, or is it, where is it? And then there are mission hooks and mission twists that you can also roll as well. So that's as close as procedurally generated you can get. Also, you can roll for NPC characters in a very similar way.
I launched a new tradition this year at the UK Games Expo, which is I'm asking the people I interviewed who I should interview next. So is there any other publisher or game you find especially interesting which you would know are here today at Expo?
Well, there are a couple. There's the Modiphius stand, which I think is somewhere in the middle of the room. They have a number of games that they've brought with them this year. Chris Birch, who runs Modiphius, it deserves a shout out because when we first wanted to run our Kickstarter, I phoned him up out of the blue, didn't know him beforehand from, and he didn't know me from Adam, but I phoned him up, and for a busy guy, he spent 2.5 hours on the phone talking me through every aspect of the Kickstarter, not because we were going to pay him at that point, not because, I mean, subsequently, he's actually been extremely useful because he's doing our distribution. But back then, when he knew nothing of us or we knew nothing of him, he just reached out and said, you're another gamer, you're a fan, so I want to help you. So that's, you know, that's someone I think you should go over and interview. And there's also a guy, an artist called Jamie, who has designed, he's got a little stand somewhere in the middle there, who designs these wonderful playing cards or gift cards or birthday cards with his characters on the front. It's D&D humor. So it's got the bard going, it's all right, this dragon, I'll sing him a tune on my lute. And the next image is, of course, the dragon chewing his head off.
What is his name, you said?
It's Jamie. I don't know his surname. I've only met him. We only met him at Dragon Meet last year. But I walked past him this morning. I said hello to him. I'll show you him afterwards. I'll point him out.
Sure.
But Jamie, he's an artist, very gifted artist. And his books and his little gift cards and things are a real treat. So worth people having a look out for. So that's who I'd suggest you interview.
Thank you. Brilliant.
You're very welcome.
This episode included Dr. Spaceman by the Free Harmonic Orchestra, The Demon Inside Your Head by Daisy May, and of course Sota of Frango, or theme song by Bandido Roll. The logo of the Rollist podcast is designed by Ronin Kunz, and you can find a number of merchandising, including mugs, notebooks, and t-shirts, with the design by Ronin Kunz and even more visual produced by him on Redbubble on the link provided in the description of this episode. You will be able to find also their t-shirts branded with the logo of the RPG Academy, of which the Rollist podcast is a proud member. A big thank you to V3, who headed to iTunes to leave a positive review about the show. Thank you so much. Great podcast, a great podcast covering all the best bits about gaming, a great mix of things, and always has the most interesting interviews and hindsight. Smiling, smiley. Tanks V3, it's brilliant, really. I mean, it's been a while since the last time I received a review on iTunes, and it really means the world to me. So thank you. And if other people head to iTunes and leave a review, I will be reading your review on the next episode. There are also other ways to support the show, including just through your purchase on DriveThru. If any of the games you've heard of in this episode interest you, well, actually, you can head to the description of this episode. Not only all the games are listed, and I mean all the games and even other stuff are listed in there, and if they are available on DriveThru, if you click on the name of the game, the link will take you directly to DriveThru, and if you purchase it, there will be a small contribution, thanks to DriveThru and your purchase, to the Release Podcast. A big thank you to the team of the UK Games Expo for allowing me to record at their event. A big thank you also to the Rollists supporting the show via Patreon. Without you, I could not afford to head to the UK Games Expo. And if you want to join them and support the show via Patreon, it will allow you to have access to our bonus show, Café Rollist, which sees myself and Akadosh comment upon the news of tabletop RPG as well as the game we are running and playing and preparing. The last episode, we had a discussion about our experience at the UK Games Expo and also had a few more words about the Lone Wolf adventure role-playing game, which we played on episode 28. If you would like to meet me in person and you are in London, the next Le Drinks and Dice will take place, as usual, on the last Monday of the month. It will be on July 30. Finally, I've noticed a number of new listeners, and it gave me the motivation to finally proceed with a remix of episode 1. So this is my very first podcast, and well, the first episode, I could not change the quality of the recording themselves, but I've learned quite a bit in terms of mixing things and looking after levels of sound and this sort of things. So I just went back to my old Audacity file and tweaked things a bit so things would sound better and re-uploaded it in place of episode 1. So if you are subscribed with the RSS, you should hit refresh. Otherwise, you can just head to the usual place and you will find a remix version of the episode 1, which is slightly easier to listen to. I mean, substantially easier to listen to, but it's still not, personally, it's still not as good as more recent episode because I didn't have the equipment, which I purchased with the support of Rollist via Patreon. But yeah, it's already an improvement. So if you never listened to the first episode and you'd be curious to sort of assess the journey of the show, well, here's your occasion. If people express some interest in that, I will probably remix also episode 2, 3, 4 and onwards. But yeah, first I need to release all the material I recorded at the UK Games Expo, and I've got 6 hours of it. 3 hours of interviews and 3 hours of actual play, so this might take a while, but I want to release that as fast as possible. Thanks for listening to the show. I hope you enjoyed it. Please send me your comments. And see you soon for our second part of our episode 29, recorded at the UK Games Expo 2018. Holy! 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 Solta o frango e vem com a gente. Holy! 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 Solta o frango e vem com a gente. Nós é tipo bem Jesus, todo mundo a gente ama. Ainda mais se for gatinha, rola até levar pra cama. A gente topa tudo, sapatão e bigodudo. Na hora do piriri, cai em mim ou travesti.
Vai, batuque!
Holy! Holy! Holy, solta o frango e vem com a gente. Holy, 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 solta o frango e vem com a gente.
Will you become one of the elite? The space combateers, set apart by their total mastery of the spaceways.